Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. Thank you so much for joining me as we share stories that celebrate creating, and of course, we're going to tune our imaginations together. My Aunt Irene loved to wear purple. She had a feisty spirit, a petite frame, a love of a good dollar store bargain, maybe a little nip at night. At least that's what I remember. I'll have to check with my family. A talent for sewing and a big presence in any room. And she was an inspiration to me. She told it like she saw it and was probably the toughest 90-year-old that I knew. She loved to tell stories and be together with family. And we still tell stories about her. She will be remembered for her dollar store cologne gifts that the guys teased would make a good drain cleaner, her Kleenex box gifts, you know, hey, it's practical, and her love of Andy's mints and those purple pants suits. And when I worked in publishing, we printed a book about the 100 most important women of the 20th century. And I gifted her a copy and told her I thought she should be in the collection. She lived a long and independent life. And we need to lift up more fabulous women and share their stories. She's one of them. And when I moved to Northfield, I remember reading the columns of Maggie Lee in the Northfield News. And it made this town feel like the small town where my grandparents lived. The stories were about the happenings and the people and the places of Northfield. And she introduced us to all the happenings in Northfield. And I felt welcome to town through her words. Then I discovered that she loved to wear purple, and that made her recognizable downtown, and she loved venturing up and down Division Street. She was iconic in Northfield, and I loved seeing her downtown. And I even got to interview her for Art Zany Radio years ago inside her downtown apartment, and I can picture it now. So much cat stuff. And if you knew Maggie, you knew how much she loved cats. Her apartment was packed with cat trinkets and magnets and pictures. And oh, how she loved this town, and this town loved Maggie. Longtime past Northfield News editor said in his introduction to her book, Community Stories Along Division Street, that was Scott Richardson, and he said, she has been the community's historian, its promoter, its confidant, its ombudsman, its conscience. And I couldn't agree more. It's just an incredible story. And so since today, well, it wasn't exactly because of it, but it happens to be International Women's Day, and we are going to be celebrating Maggie Lee today. So happy day. I hope you're lucky enough to have a woman in your life that inspires you. And I hope actually you have a crowd of women supporting you. Sometimes in life, we're lucky, though, to have a woman who helps lifts up a whole town and a woman who loves to wear purple. So today, we're going to celebrate Northfield's own Maggie Lee. And joining me in the studio today, I'm thrilled to have with us historian Susan Vistendahl. Welcome to Art Zany Radio again.
Thank you, Paula. I'm glad to be back.
It's a thrill. And also Northfield Historical Society Collections Manager, Alexis Kraft.
Good morning, Paula. Thank you for having me.
This is your first visit. I'm thrilled that you're here and so excited to hear about this new show called Maggie Lee, the Exhibit. And it's now open at the Northfield Historical Society. You can get details about the Historical Society at northfieldhistory.org. And I believe there's also a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And it's located at 408 Division Street. If you're listening and want to come downtown, it's a great place to stop and visit and learn a little bit more about our community and ask questions. And there's a gift shop too, and it is an Historical Society. I just want to mention too, they're having their annual members meeting. So if you're a member or you'd like to contribute so that you can be a member. That is Monday, March 11th from 6 to 7:30 at the museum. It has been open since 1975, and it's dedicated to preserving, interpreting, and honoring the unique history of Northfield, Minnesota.
I believe John Olson is going to give a talk, right?
That sounds correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay, and John Olson, tell me, do you know the topic?
No.
Okay. It'll be worth seeing. So we can go ahead and put that on their calendars. And first, I'll start with you, Alexa, since you're new. If you want to introduce yourself to our listeners,
sure.
A little bit about you, your world, and maybe your connection to Maggie Lee.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Alexis. I am new to town. I'm very new to the Historical Society. I started the Historical Society in December. So this is my first exhibit there, which is really, really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I started at the library in May. That's when I moved to Northfield for. And I really dove headfirst into all things Northfield. I live on Division Street. I walk down to work at the library, and I walk down to work at the Historical Society. So it's just been a wonderful experience to get to know everyone and get to know this community.
How did you connect with Northfield, and what was it about our town that you decided that that's where you wanted to move?
Absolutely, yeah. So I went to undergrad in Iowa, down at Drake in Des Moines. And then I was last in Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, going to grad school there. And I don't want to upset any Iowans or Illinoisans, but people will tell you the Midwest is the same, and it's not. Minnesota and Northfield especially, there's something special about it.
I have lived in both those places, yes. Illinois and Iowa, and I would agree.
You agree. So, okay, yes. Good. I'm not too controversial. Good.
No.
I started at the library in May, and that first week, it just immediately felt like home to me. So I'm originally from about an hour west of here, a small town called Arlington. So
I don't think I know that.
Yes,
a lot
lots of folks do not. I say, I'm from a small town about an hour west of here, and they go, what's it called? And I'm like, Arlington, you don't know what it is. It's okay. No one does.
How small is small?
It's about 2,000 people.
Okay.
So about 10 times smaller than Northfield. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know a lot of people feel, especially maybe college students, feel like Northfield's pretty small. To me, it's big.
It's compared
to what I'm used to. Exactly. But I still feel that same feeling I felt in my hometown, where I just feel welcomed, and there's just incredible kindness, and I felt that from the moment I got here. Yeah.
That makes me feel great, and I wish you could have known Maggie Lee, but
I bet too.
We'll talk a little more about through the exhibit how you've gotten to know her. So I'm so thrilled that you're here today.
Thank you.
And Susan, give us an update on what you've been working on, and folks may know you from some of your columns that you wrote in the Entertainment Guide, Historic Happenings, and all the work that you've done to bring life to those in our special places in our community and people.
Thank you. Well, my story in Northfield begins in 1964 when I came to St. Olaf, and I graduated in 1968. My brother David also came, and he's still here. So in 2004, I returned from New York to Northfield, where I'd gone to college at St. Olaf, from my hometown of Brookings, South Dakota. And because my mother, Marion, and David were living here. And in New York, I had worked for a baseball writer named Roger Kahn. I'd been a Spanish teacher, a freelance writer. I was doing feature stories and such. And that's when I first developed an interest in local history, because I wrote about a man in Peekskill whose relative had served in Congress with President Lincoln, and he found a trunk full of historic documents in his attic, which were unknown to the public. So I spent time telling the public about that.
I didn't know this story about you. I'm so glad you shared that. That's really
fascinating. Well, when I got to Northfield then, I started researching the former 1910 bank building, which David had his law practice at. And then I soon found that the best sources of information around town were the Northfield Historical Society and a writer for the Northfield News who was a Northfield native and knew everything about town history. Mm-hmm. That was Maggie Lee. And the next year, 2005, was a sesquicentennial year. And I was hired by the Northfield Historical Society to do research on various aspects of the town history for that. So she helped me with that. And then in 2007, I started a column for the Northfield Entertainment Guide Historic Happenings, which was about people and places in Northfield. And that ended up in the three books that you see around town about historic happenings in Northfield, St. Olaf, and Carlton. And I wanted to mention, Maggie showed me one day where she kept at her office hundreds of envelopes crammed with clippings about the town, the people, and it was at her office. And she told me she had a story about every single house in town. She could tell you the people that had lived there. And then she would haul down from the closet in the Northfield News, bound copies of the Northfield News as far back as the 1800s for me to use, because she knew where everything was. And these were crumbling. Some of the pages were absolutely crumbling. So I did get nervous about that. But she was the person to go to, that's for sure. So that's how I got into my friendship. It became a friendship with Maggie Lee ultimately. And I would take her places and do things with her. And we'll get into some of the other things.
Yeah, I think that's really important to have a person in town that is that, you know, well-versed in the history and the stories, and, you know, and her writings will be remembered for
absolutely.
A long time.
Yeah.
She will show us. I think about her, I forget the name of the column where she walked around town and kind of just visited the retail.
Long Division.
That's it, yes. And she would, introduce us to the people and the little, what was available in each store. And a lot of those places aren't here anymore. Mm-hmm. And so she gives us a life to those places.
Absolutely.
That won't exist unless we had her writings. How was she chosen as the subject for this exhibit?
Well, I have to give credit to our director at the Historical Society, Sean Allen. He had the idea to do sort of a rotating exhibit on a notable Northfielder. Mm. And Maggie is our first one. And I think for a lot of people, she's the first one that came to mind.
Of course.
And like a lot of folks that grew up in Northfield, Sean has a personal connection to her. I believe it's mostly that his mom made him go over and mow her lawn because they lived pretty close together when he was a kid. So I did not know anything about Maggie, obviously, before I started at the Historical Society. So it's just been such a treat to get to know her through her what's left and her legacy.
And it's great. And we had a reception just the other night, which was really fun to be there. Lots of people showed up.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was really great. What were some of the reactions, or, you know, when you were searching down materials, what were some of the, things that came forth? And I'm sure you had trouble trying to select what of this, you know, 90 some plus your life are we going to be having on display?
Absolutely. So I want to make sure that I shout out, and I'm sure we'll bring her up again, but our intern, Eliana Giswold, who put the vast majority of work into this exhibit and really made it what it is. So I really want to make sure she gets her credit.
Mm-hmm.
She was with us for all of January. She's a Northfield High School graduate, but she now goes to Luther down in Iowa. So she was with us for all of January, working very diligently to comb through the vast amount of artifacts we have from Maggie. Maggie gave pretty much everything to the Historical Society when she passed. So we have her baby clothes. We have family photos. We have some really personal things. We have her wig. We have a lot of her clothes. We have her glasses. We have her jewelry. We had a wealth of information and a wealth of material to work from. So really what I wanted to do was hopefully use my outsider perspective to our advantage and make it something that both people that knew her and loved her and people that didn't know her at all, like me, but hopefully will come to love her, can appreciate equally.
I think you've done a good job. And there's so there's some of those artifacts that you mentioned, including her, a desk and what we think is her typewriter.
Yeah, I mean, it's in pictures with her. I don't want to, we can't confirm for sure, but it was definitely used at the Northfield News. And that has been in our collection for a while.
Yeah, and that was really fun to see that set up. And then there's some interviews that are on video with stories of Maggie Lee. So I encourage everybody to come if they want to come to the Northfield Historical Society and see the exhibit. How do they do that?
So all of our hours are online. You're welcome to come. Admission is pretty cheap. I think it's like $5 or something. That includes our RAID exhibit, which is our permanent exhibit at the Historical Society. Hopefully this will be up through the fall, so you have plenty of time to come check it out. But I'm really proud of how it turned out, and I hope folks come and take a peek.
Right. It's a very cool exhibit. We should shout out to Eliana and her. Mm-hmm. She has the, what do you call it? The wig on a mask, wig on a stick. With the purple glasses that you can put on and take a selfie. And it was just so much fun.
Yeah, she came up with a bunch of interactive ideas that I think are just fabulous.
Yeah, it gives its personality.
Yeah.
You can write a letter to the editor. You want to explain that?
Yeah, sure. So as I'm sure lots of people know, and you'll find out in our oral histories on video if you come see, Maggie was just constantly writing. I mean, I think Scott Richardson described it as she defied circadian rhythm. She really, she worked at all hours of the day. So to meet your deadline, as part of our exhibit, we have an old electric typewriter that you can use to write a letter and file away and just talk about what Maggie meant to you or what you've learned about her from the exhibit and just cause, you know, kind of have a moment of reflection, which I think is really wonderful.
I think it'll be fun if any young kids go because they may not even like know typewriters, right?
Exactly.
To use it. Totally. And but some of us will be like, "That's exactly what I learned to type on. It's so fun." Mm-hmm. So that's another element of the story. And you know, I think Maggie Lee just she made connections and did so much for this town. And so it's so great to be able to reflect on her life. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that this morning. She would have been over 100 now if she had had been here. But she dedicated from basically after high school till long into, you know, she was writing in her 90s. Mm-hmm. So she has stories galore, and people, everyone who knew her has a Maggie story. What are some of the words, Susan, that come to your mind when you think of Maggie Lee?
Oh, words. that would take all day, I think, to come up with all the words. I wondered if maybe I could give you a little idea of how she came to write for Northfield.
Sure, that's fine.
At the beginning of that. Because that helped form her, you know. She was born on January 5th, 1921 at a hospital. And we've mentioned that before, that it was a hospital that was on 8th and Water Street. And there's a famous story about her birth, which is in the exhibit, and that is that there was a furnace in the hospital that went off overnight. And the babies had to be warmed in the oven of in the oven of the kitchen range. And you have to be careful on that, right?
Well, and that surprises me because I think a lot of us remember the hospital that was over in what is now Way Park.
Way Park, yeah.
As the first hospital, but this was downtown.
And this is just a house, It was just a house made over into the first hospital. She was the only child. They had been married for 14 years, her folks had, before she was born. And I just watched an oral history of Maggie that was done at the Historical Society, and that reminded me. Her father had done construction work at Carleton, and he was the maintenance carpenter there at Carleton. Her mother had actually been a model in Donaldson's, and that was an interesting thing to
hear. Oh, folks
hear
remember
about
that department store,
and
I'm sure.
Yeah, she learned how to make hats, and she would wear the hats up and down the aisles, you know, to intrigue people about buying those hats. And so, and she talked about there not being very many children around where she was, and so she pretended a lot. She said that she would make up that people were living in the trees. And the other thing she said, when she went to grade school, in first grade, she remembers being astounded at all the kids in the playground. She had no idea there were other kids, you know, that many kids around. So, and then she became news editor of the Periscope.
Which is at the high school, right? The newspaper, or the newsletter, newspaper, what did they call it?
Newspaper, yeah.
Newspaper, okay.
Yeah, yes, that's their newspaper. And her senior year, she was sick. But she still became valedictorian, and you at the Historical Society were able to find her valedictory address. And so I thought that was really neat to see that, to see the young Maggie you know, being so hopeful for the future and
It was called There Is Hope. That was the title of it. And it, like you said, it's at the exhibit. And there was a line that caught my attention in there that she said, "We have learned that energy is much better spent in preparing for life than in worrying." Maybe we could take a little of that now.
I wish I could keep that.
Yeah, she really talked about how jobs were hard to find and it was so important at that time to do preparation during your high school years to make the most so that you could find yourself to be valuable. And she also told people to find a job that, you know, followed your passion, which is still good advice.
And which she did, And then she went to a business college up in Minneapolis to learn accounting. And she says in this tape, "I did all right." However, and she worked for a clothing store for a while there. But it wasn't her passion, let's put it that way. And so when she was on a train coming back home to Northfield, she met someone who said, "I hear there's a job opening up for an accountant at, or a bookkeeper, down at the Northfield News." And that's the one job she said she would return home for her. And her mother had already gotten her an appointment, you know.
Imagine how that worked in those days.
And that was during World War II. And there weren't that many people working there, and so she very quickly moved into writing, you know. Of course, that was became her passion anyway. And on the tape, she said that the man who hired her was a crook and was gotten rid of.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Fairly short. And Herman Rowe, who had been the man who was the editor-publisher, he was out of town, but as soon as he heard what was happening with this guy, he came. There's so many things you can find out about history.
And was that through the newspaper you learned that, or how did
I learn that from Maggie's lips in that recording? She said he was a crook.
The oral history, okay.
The oral history, exactly. So, anyway, that's some of the early ones, early information about it. She became editor then for 19 years, as you know.
And worked there from that 1944 all the way up until probably 2012.
Her last column was on, I think, June 9th, 2012, yes. And then she went right into the Three Links.
Just like take a moment, folks, and think about all in the world that she sifted through for us and talked about and wrote about, because all the history that happened between 44 and 2012, she was able to do that. And she always put a Northfield lens on it and wrote, one of her columns was "For Women Only." Which
men could read and did.
I think that's what she said. I don't know that I know some of the topics that she covered in some of those things. Was it similar to her just stories about people and places, as far as you know?
Well, the little tidbit I love to hear is that she put in her cats any opportunity she could. So most of Northfield knew what her cats were up to, when they were going to the vet, things like that, which I think is just such a treasure.
right. It does. It gives a personality to the stories, and very a local feel. And I think people appreciated that. And I think they still do.
Yeah,
they still do.
Totally.
I have an example of a couple of the stories that she wrote back in the 50s that people won't remember. One of them was from March 5th, 1953. She said, "Disconcerting discovery. I found out from working crossword puzzles my apparently uncomplicated family name Lee, generally believed to refer to a nice grassy meadow, could also mean dregs of wine."
I didn't know that definition either.
And she had a great sense of humor. They had an April Fool's edition in that same year, and she spoofed her own column. So she wrote "For Men Only" in the voice of her cat, Pooter. And Pooter told the readers, "A cat's life is not so bad. We don't pay income tax. We have new fur coats twice a year. Nobody has decided that catnip causes lung cancer." So this was her sense of humor for April 1st there. So I think we need to also remember that aspect of her life as well.
Yeah, she was always working. I think, and I heard the story that sometimes she would even sleep a little bit at the Northfield News office because she was...
Oh, yeah, more than a little bit.
Yes, I don't want to spoil Scott Richardson's lovely oral history, but he goes into depth about her narcolepsy and some of the... He had gotten so used to it, but when visitors would come and just see her slouched over at her computer or typewriter, depending on the era, they were like, she... Okay. And he's like, that's just Maggie. That's just Maggie.
Yes. Yeah. I remember when I did the interview that she didn't want to come Friday at 9 o'clock because that wasn't a good time for her. And so we had to make arrangements to do it at a like late afternoon was more her. Like,
that was her time. And she'd stay overnight, I understand. Right?
Yep. She would.
Yeah. So. She was just a character. I think that if Absolutely. Anyone knows, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. We are celebrating on this International Women's Day Maggie Lee, who has a new exhibit at the Northfield Historical Society called Maggie Lee, the Exhibit. I'm here today with Susan Vistendahl and Alexis Kreft, and we're talking about this exhibit and all the stories that, you know, Maggie Lee is, you know, helps us remember. And the ways that we remember her, and a little bit about how, you know, Northfield can, you know, embrace some of those people that came before and help sort of set the standards and bring to life. So some of the qualities that, you know, she brings to life, you know, she valued history.
Absolutely.
And she, one of the things I learned was that she was one of the founders of the Northfield Historical Society.
She was, yeah. And she was also really paramount in the acquisition of the Scriber Building for the Historical Society. So she was really a passionate promoter of Northfield's history. We have, as part of her little desk setup at the exhibit, a Northfield Historical Society founder mug that she obviously treasured. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I was surprised that that was just 1976 because Northfield's history goes back way before that. And to think that there were all those years when they weren't collecting those stories and telling those tales is intriguing. And so I was so grateful to hear that she was a part of the impetus for making that happen and really, you know, raising the funds to the building needed some work.
Yep.
And to help us to bring that to life and you know, be one of those founders.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into her eccentricity, shall we say,
more,
I thought I would tell you a little bit about some of the awards that and honors that she got. For one thing, she did really love her work. I have a Star Tribune story here from 2003 that quoted her as saying, "I hope they never have to carry me. I hope I can do this until they carry me out." Sorry. Until they carry me out of that. So under her leadership, the Northfield News had first prizes for page layouts, notices on history, family, lifestyle, and many headlines. Here's one. 1953, more honors for Maggie, elected to regional press woman post. So that's a point we have to realize. There weren't many women that, you know, and she was one of the first women, certainly at the Northfield News and thereon. Another example is that she wrote about a hobbyist who found Indian relics near Northfield. Then I have another one. She wins a national prize. She won an award in the Presswoman's contest. And second prize columns in a weekly newspaper. And I wanted to quote this from one of the judge who wrote about her column for Women Only. "The writer is a born storyteller, able to weave a major item around the most minor happening and make it seem also important." And another judge praised an editorial of hers, saying, "Making readers see facts in new lights is one of the great challenges for the editorial writer, one this writer accomplishes." I think that's important to get into some of the accolades that she...
Absolutely, you know. Yeah. And the way we translated that into the exhibit is when we were sort of recreating her desk, we have all of these awards that she had in frames, in the original frames. So we were able to put those up. And then also there's a photo of her at that Minnesota Press Women Association conference. I just think it's wonderful that she was able to interact with a community of other women writers too.
Right. And like you said, we have to take ourselves back to the time when the mm-hmm. press was probably mostly male dominated. And so to have, you know, that press organization for women was probably a big help to her.
Yeah.
And she was very successful at
Absolutely.
It.
And Northfield awarded her a lot. She had the Defeat of Jesse James Day's honor to be parade marshal in 1981. And then in 2009, she mm-hmm. got the Joseph Lee Haywood Award, which I believe you have.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we have that. And we have a photo of her as the grand marshal in the parade. Yes.
Right. And it's fun to me to realize that, I've forgotten the year now, but Google did a street view thing from up above. And everybody was saying, there's Maggie Lee. They could see her crossing the street.
It was such an, I love that story.
Such
yeah.
an exciting thing. And then I remember a section of the Millstown Trail that was named after her. She cut the purple ribbon, and that runs between 5th and 7th Street. Mm. And there's a picture you have of her sitting right near the Cannon River that was had to do with that.
Yeah, we should mention too that really, if we think about our river walk, she mm-hmm. was essential yeah. in, you know, encouraging that development. Because, and I don't know which one of you wants to address
Susan,
that.
Susan, you take that away. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have information about that because when I wrote about her in my Historic Happenings book, I did a lot of looking at the old Northfield newses on at the library, and She really had a drumbeat for the town to put in that river walk along the Cannon River. She had had visits to San Antonio in the 50s and 60s in Texas, and she saw that they had a city river development project there. And when she became editor in 1967, she posted a picture of what could happen in Northfield. She pictured San Antonio saying, it could happen here, she said. A dream that could come true for Northfield, a beautiful Cannon River, and that would be on the front page. So volunteers lobbied City Hall, and they raised funds, but the plan for developing fell through. Several years later, the city staff got interested again, liked the idea, and they had a new city planner named Dave Maroney, who was there from the 80 through 88, and he shared her vision. So he pushed for this idea to come to fruition for the river enhancement. And now we have, of course, that wonderful river walk, and people go along it, in particular during defeat days when we have all the arts that is there. Maggie never wanted to take credit, though. I found some other places where she, you know, she made sure that people realized that it wasn't just her.
I was struck by her humility too. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. When you think about the wealth of work she's done for the city and how, again, she was always giving credit to other people, it's really amazing. Yeah.
And I think, too, that continues on because we're now currently looking at what else we can do to enhance that river
yeah.
walk area. And so that's a really great way to connect that was not the original plan, that
yeah.
she was a part of bringing that to life, and something to remember as you're walking down that space to think about folks like Maggie and all the other people. I often do that when I'm walking through town, thinking about how many other footprints, how many other...
Yeah.
people have walked up and down Division Street to go to the library, to, you know, get a cup of coffee, to, you know, have something, a snack, go to eat somewhere.
Absolutely.
Go to a play, all those things.
Yeah, one of the many things I feel like I relate to Maggie with is, and I'm sure you can talk about this, Susan, she didn't drive at all. So
yeah.
she walked all around town. And as far as I understand, she had a little wheelie cart she would take with her a lot of places.
She had a cart.
Yep.
Yes.
So she was just kind of, especially when she was writing Long Division and telling these stories of the people along Division Street, she was just going back and forth and back and forth. I really relate to that now because I feel like that's my life today.
Right. And that was that some things don't change.
Exactly.
And I was thinking about your job as collections manager because mm-hmm. you, as of course you noted, you have way more than you could have exhibited
yes.
in the space to celebrate her life. So I'd love to learn a little more about the role of a collections manager and how that, you know, works, because, you know, she donated quite a mm-hmm. large collection. And
yes.
so tell us what your job is like.
Well, thanks for asking. So the collections manager really works pretty hands-on in the archives. I am kind of the archives person at the Historical Society. We're a pretty small team, but along with Sean, and that I mentioned, there's also Mark Thornton, who's our outreach coordinator, and then Bryn Artley, who I also want to give a shout out. She's our digital media specialist, and she put together that oral history video and just did a fantastic job, so I want to make sure she gets credit for that, too. So, yeah, I work in the archives. I help put together exhibits. This exhibit was really a team effort, so everyone was working together. I mean, putting things up on the walls and making sure everything was level. I mean, really kind of hands-on stuff like that. But then I also do a lot of research consultations. So I get pretty frequent research questions, especially with how historical Northfield is as a town, on genealogy research, on people wanting to know about stagecoach stations in the 1800s. I mean, that's kind of the level of granularity that I'm working with a lot of the time.
And so then you use those collections to sort of help them find those stories or find those references and,
Correct,
be able to look at pictures.
Exactly.
So I would imagine then part of that is you have to have that organized.
Yes. Yes. And that's why I really have come to appreciate Maggie's work, too, because I'm using her work pretty much every day. So that file folder of newspaper clippings that you mentioned is in our basement in the archives. And one of Sean and Mark's favorite party tricks, I call it, is when a visitor comes to the archives, especially if they grew up in Northfield, really, you can look through your name and you can find all of the clippings that Maggie made of you. Oh. You know, you in high school, you on the honor roll in college, things like that. It is just such a beautiful personal thing, and you really realize the time that she took and the care that she put into her work. So yeah, those are kind of my two main things. We also get donations quite often at the Historical Society, so I work with our collections committee to decide what gets accessioned or added to our collection, and then also cataloging it in our database and making sure everything's in the right place, which is an ongoing project.
Yeah, I would think, you know, how do you know what keyword to use to you know, what even to title something, right?
Yeah.
That's a really important decision because you want people to be able to access it and find it. And so I'm sure you're thinking of many more words than are, you know, any way you can envision that somebody might make a connection to this
exactly
piece of history.
Exactly, yeah. And I previously worked in a university archives environment, and I realized how different that was when I came to the Historical Society. The thing that is amazing and wonderful about the Historical Society is that since 1975, the people that have been putting in the work are people that care, and a lot of times are volunteering their time to do this, mm-hmm. which is amazing. And also means that sometimes things are a little disorganized and sometimes things have been done differently from decade to decade. And a lot of my job is to kind of even things out and making sure we're following archival standards.
Sure. And I would think, too, the technologies have changed,
yes.
too. So
yes.
even from 75 to now, yep. The development of the, you know, computer resources and digital ways of storing things have changed a lot.
And we are very lucky. I think a lot of historical societies don't have an ongoing historical record. We have all of our donation records going back to the 70s. So if something's a little funky in our online database, I can always go back and look at the paper sheet, which is always a treat, too, to look at, oh, how did we get this mastodon tooth that came from the 80s and someone found it in their backyard, you know? Every day I get to do something like that, which is really special.
Yeah, that, I love that. But that's only a part of your job. I think the mm-hmm. other interesting thing about you, people may know you or think, I've heard that voice before at the library. So tell us about your role as a reference librarian.
Absolutely. So my technical title is Adult Programming and Outreach Librarian. And I'm there about 3/4 of my time. And then I spend the other quarter of my time at the Historical Society and grad school, which I'm also in. Yeah, lots of free time.
3/4 plus 1/4 plus grad school.
And yeah, over 100%, yes. But yeah, I work at the reference desk quite a bit, which is really fantastic because I get to take a lot of my skills that I've learned at the Historical Society and a lot of the resources I didn't know were there and help folks that come to the library. But yeah, I also do programming for adults. So probably about 1/2 or 3/4 of the programs you see for adults at the library. I'm working with presenters to come in, and then I also have a book club at the library, and I do outreach visits. So we go out to senior living facilities with our bookmobile and our book bike, and to preschools, and we also have our new library Oasis, which is just wonderful.
That's out of the Northfield Community Resource Center.
Yeah, right by the CIC. Yep. So we just have a fantastic team. I'm looking at the Northfield Public Library right now and thinking about all the fantastic people that are in there right now. So I'm very grateful to get to work with them.
It is a great place. And so that's another, which probably is a perfect time then to bring up this brand new group, the Culture Crew.
Yeah.
And you'll see their orange segment as
yes.
their... Which I think Bree had something.
Bryn had something to do with. And then my coworker Steve over at the library. They
two great designers.
Yes.
And so this is just a group that's decided that, you know, the Guild, the Public Library, and the Historical Society are kind of, you know, the foundations, right, of downtown Northfield.
Yes.
And the reason people come to town, and one of the anchors, if you will.
Yeah.
I guess that's one way to look at it. And thought, you know, we should come together and bring all of what we excel at and highlight mm-hmm. that. And their very first event is coming up on Thursday, March 14th at the Grand, another mm-hmm. iconic Northfield
right.
piece. And the Culture Crew is going to present Alfred Hitchcock's Dial M for Murder.
Yes.
So it's a movie night. And I think it doesn't say in this ad that I have here, but if I recall, I heard folks talking about that actually that night will be... let's see, the 120th. Yes.
Yep.
And the anniversary of the first showing of a film at the Grand.
Yes. And that was total serendipity.
What?
I mean, really, it was wild. I think Sean was the one who put that together. It was amazing. And on top of that, again, connecting this historical piece and the wealth of information that the Historical Society has and how important the Northfield News has been to preserving that history. To put together this ad, what I did was I pulled old issues of the Northfield News. We have those cloth-bound copies that you mentioned, Susan,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them are especially from the 1800s.
Of course.
Kind of tricky condition, but I pulled some from the 30s and 40s and looked at old movie ads that the Grand had from that time, and it was just amazing.
Fun.
And I know that Steve also designed that poster, and he took some inspiration from there.
And that'll be at 6 p.m.,
yeah.
and the feature starts at 7. I believe there's going to be a showing of a documentary from a student...
Yeah,
director.
It's actually a fiction film, kind of a horror inspired, but the really cool thing about it was filmed at the library, at the public library. So there's that connection, and the director's name is Esme, and that's starting at 6:30, so I hope people will turn up early for that.
That will be, so I need to come a little bit earlier
yeah.
for that. And there's going to be a dinner menu.
Mm-hmm.
The folks at the Grand are doing a phenomenal job of
yeah.
bringing to life that place, and there's going to be drinks available for purchase at the bar. I hope everybody comes out Thursday, March 14th at 6 p.m. at the Grand. What a great synergy.
Yeah.
All things Northfield, which I think Maggie would have been there celebrating with us.
I think probably people are going to wonder, why did she wear purple? I think we ought to get into a little bit on that, although
of course.
It's not the most important part. But
it's kind of fun.
When she stepped down at age 65 from being editor, she said in that tape that I watched that she started wearing purple because purple became popular again, and she'd always liked that color. And so she bought skirts and dresses and kept replacing her wardrobe with purple. And she wore a red one one day, and people all said, "Hey, where's the purple?" So she decided to adopt that color. And not only for purple clothes, shoes, fingernails, handbags, her wire-rimmed glasses, rings, and gradually all the other colors just faded from her wardrobe, and so she became associated with that.
And yeah, I was thinking, because my aunt did that as well,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I was thinking about, like, there was a book when I was in book selling that, "When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple," and
uh-huh.
and it was based, I looked up this morning, it was based on a poem called Warning by a British poet, Jenny Joseph, and I was just thinking how that, you know, cultural synergy, how it happened, right? That, but it was part of a celebration of women just deciding, "I'm going to be who I want to be. I'm going to put
yeah.
myself out there, and I'm going to love what I love, and let everybody see it, and not worry." So there, probably in their growing up and their careers, there were a lot of restrictions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of what
yeah.
you could wear, you couldn't wear, what you, how you had to look, how you had to be, and they finally just said, "Enough."
Yeah,
sounds like the Red Hat Ladies, right?
Yeah,
there's
it could be
too.
Another of that too. And so I love that she celebrated that and did make her iconic and made her
yep.
very visible in town and adored and remembered for that, because there was a,
yeah.
a day too that we celebrated in 2012.
Oh, yes, that's right. Before I get into that, I think I want to do one other thing that's very personal to me.
Sure.
In 2009, and then I'll mention what happened in 2012. I was given the role of a reporter in the musical Bye Bye Birdie, put on by the Northfield Arts Guild, which meant I got to ask questions of Comrade Birdie, who was like Elvis Presley drafted and so on. And we came up with the idea that I'd pretend to be Maggie Lee as a reporter at this time. So I found a wig that, like she wore. I found a similar pair of glasses. They came up with a purple suit, and I put a cat pin on it. That's another thing we can talk about is all her cat collection stuff that she had. And I have a picture of us together at with Maggie Lee laughing in delight at being portrayed in that fashion.
That's Northfield's way of doing Bye Bye Birdie, right?
And yeah, to have a local reporter in there.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you mentioned 2012. This was came about on July 26, 2012. We had a Wear Purple for Maggie Lee Day. It came about because John Thomas and I were on the patio of the Contented Cow, and we had learned that Maggie had been taken to Three Links Care Center. This was the summer of 2012, and she wrote her last column that June.
Mm-hmm.
John's idea was, you know, everyone should wear purple one day just to honor Maggie, you know. And a light bulb went off over my head, and I said, let's do it. And so we got together all these things. It was held in conjunction with Crazy Days, and Taste of Northfield had been rescheduled. So we had that. We had publicity for everyone to come downtown in purple. We had a stage, and I recruited Ed Kuhlman and Scott Richard was the MC. Randy Ferguson was on guitar, Chris Moen on bass, Ann Eder and Joni Johnson were singers, and Marilyn Sellers on piano. And I have to mention about Marilyn, she was a professional singer who was a great friend of Maggie. Mm-hmm. Maggie had followed her career since Marilyn was in a one-room country school at Little Prairie. And Marilyn sang her hit song, One Day at a Time, which had charted nationally for 43 weeks in 1974, and even beat out Elvis Presley on the country LP list. And Scott led the people in singing of the Ballad of Maggie Lee that he had written to the tune of Rawhide. And if we still have time, I will just read a few.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Go ahead and read a few lines from that.
I won't sing them. I will just read them so you can. So this is the Rawhide tune. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Keep those presses rolling. Keep those presses rolling, Maggie. News and information. Your readers are waiting, hungry for what you've got to say. City council steaming, school board is dreaming, opinion is what you try to sway. And here's the chorus. Get the news, make it sing, type it up, paste it up, turn the press, hit the street, Maggie. Eat a bite, check the mail, pet the cat, get some sleep, back to work, Maggie.
You did an excellent job with that.
Wonderful job.
Yay.
Yay.
Thanks to Scott Richardson, who is very clever with those parodies. He did one for Wayne Eddy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this was a wonderful event that we had. We had Meow shirts made by the Prairie's Edge Humane Society that were sold, Meows for Maggie.
And yeah, there was an adoption event in the Northfield News Building, as far as I understand it.
Yes,
yeah.
I do.
And no, none of the kittens got adopted, unfortunately, but people came in and admired them, and then they got information about how they could help out with the cats and the kittens. And I have to credit Bridget Foster Halcock, who took a great picture of the crowd in purple. And if you see the video that's down there at the Historical Society now, I'm holding up that picture so you can see all your friends and neighbors that were that came down in purple. And Scott Richardson is also interviewed, and also her good friend Marie Gary. So that's a great video that you should also take time to watch.
Yeah,
not just because I'm in it.
It was easy for everybody to come together to celebrate Maggie Lee, and wearing purple was so much fun to be a part of that experience for her. And, you know, it's so great to have those memories and have those stories that we can go back and, you know, reflect on where we've been, what influencers were. And I was thinking, for both of you, you both love history.
Mm-hmm.
And for families out there thinking, well, what pieces should we keep? How do we make decisions about what is important? What advice would you give to families?
Well, I was just thinking about the t-shirt, the Meows for Maggie t-shirt we have, and that's on display as part of the exhibit. And some of my favorite artifacts we have, I mean, we have really important things like the gun that was used in the Jesse James bank raid, things like that. But some of my favorite things that we have are things like t-shirts and pins, and we have shopping bags from shops that are no longer here on Division Street. I just think those things are so special, and they're so everyday, but they really are relics of history. So even things like that that you might not think are important but are intensely local, that's really what we're trying to collect at the Historical Society. So
that is interesting, and it's hard to imagine, right? I think about the things every time I've moved, and I've just said, I don't know what to do with this, and off it goes. And it's hard to know in context what my kids might like to remember, or a couple decades down the road, people might want to know.
Yeah.
What advice would you have, Susan, for someone who's looking at historical pieces or stories? How would you tell people to think about holding on to those things?
Well, it depends what space you have.
That is a big deal, yes.
I'm contemplating all those Bing and Grendel plates that I've collected, Christmas plates that were supposed to be gaining in value over the years, and now I see them at the antique stores for $10.
Yeah. Right, and so that is interesting, just thinking about who's your audience, maybe. Is it good, you know, if it's for your kids, it might be one thing, but if it's for the town, it might be another.
Yeah.
And so that's a good conversations to have.
Yeah.
I think I enjoy that, thinking about what story do you want to leave behind? Because stories will always be with us, whether you have the objects or not, and how are you going to do that so that it doesn't go away when you know, as naturally happens. And
Fortunately, I was going to say we have that Maggie's book, which I think people would be interested in buying. And I saw you have some copies of that there. It was done in 2005.
Right. And I forgot the name of the title of that.
It's called Northfield, Inc.
Yep. And I-N-K. It's her collection from Long Division, her column.
Yeah. Right. And so it's not even all of them, because I think she had over 1,000.
No. Yes. 990 she wrote in the introduction to that. And she could only get 75 into the book.
Oh, Lord. And you know, we did lose Maggie in 2013, but we're still remembering her. And the Historical Society is a great place to go to catch up on those stories and start those memories.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can tell you just a little bit about when she died, just to get that in there. She spent a year at Three Links, and I would visit her, and I would take her out in her in the wheelchair, and she would sort of admire. There were some there's a flower garden there, and so she would admire the flower garden, and we would talk. And but it wasn't a happy period of time for her. Obviously, she was so independent, and to be reliant on others there at Three Links became quite difficult. I heard she became a little obstreperous at times, and but at any rate, in July of 2013, because she died on July 8th, 2013, at the age of 92, we had a service for her at the church, the Emmaus Church that she had gone to. And we planted a magnolia tree on the church property, and everyone did a shovel of dirt around the tree. And her former pastor, Will Healy, accompanied us on harmonica. We sang a song that she loved, Jesus Loves Me. And then Marilyn Sellers had sung Amazing Grace at the service, had come down for that. So
beautiful
that
way.
Was, and I believe she donated her body. I'm not positive, but I had given, but someone else said, well, she's out in the cemetery, so have to check on that.
Right. Well, I think she's here all throughout Northfield.
Yeah.
And it's been such a pleasure to celebrate her with both of you. I want to thank my guests today, Susan Vistendahl and Alexis Kreft from the Northfield Historical Society. Keep telling those stories. And folks, I hope you always remember to add some art zany to your life. And in the meantime, till next time, please enjoy your imagination.
The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region.
Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.